is Friday, March 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States' top diplomat calls on NATO allies to boost their defense spending. U.S. President Donald Trump travels to heartland America as his poll numbers decline. And we get ready for this weekend's Academy of Country Music Awards in Las Vegas. It's all ahead. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, meeting with his NATO allies' counterparts, said in Brussels Friday that they must increase their country's defense budgets. The top U.S. diplomat told the foreign ministers the alliance must have the necessary resources for NATO to fulfill its mission in places like Iraq and Syria. I spoke with VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez in London about Secretary Tillerson's remarks.
The call has been made for a number of years by previous administrations for countries to contribute a minimum of 2% of their GDP. Some countries are making that minimum, but many are not. And surprisingly, some of the larger economies, like Germany, is not. Germany, incidentally, was the first to balk at the request. It simply is not going to be politically an easy thing for some of these countries to do.
What kind of reaction did Mr. Tillerson get?
Germany's foreign minister very quickly made a statement saying that essentially rejecting that call, Germany, like other countries in Western Europe particularly, simply find it very difficult. It's politically risky for them to propose to their populations, to their electorates, that defense spending should go up. And of course, what would have to happen is that in their national budgets, they would have to cut things like social services, not something that any politician wants to confront.
Secretary Tillerson also spoke about Russian aggression in Ukraine, and his comments were seen to be tougher than any official of the Trump administration has made so far towards Moscow.
Well, he's got a fine line to walk. He is coming to NATO against the backdrop of remarks made by President Trump, then a presidential candidate Trump, calling NATO obsolete. And so Tillerson has the job of trying to convince them to get on board, to make their minimum contributions, and therefore he needs to tell them something that will convince them. And where many of these NATO allies stand united is on the issue of Ukraine and the concerns about the Russian threat. And so this was one reason why he found it very necessary to bring up the issue, to show that he is not, that the United States at no point is abandoning Ukraine, and that its posture against Russia is a very strong one, unlike what the U.S. media, a lot of the media, both in the United States and outside of the U.S., have been portraying.
Well, meanwhile, in London, where you are, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, he also expressed concern in regard to Russia, particularly, I believe he talked about Russian involvement, possibly with Taliban fighters in Afghanistan?
Very strong statements made on the part of the Secretary Mattis. He made it very clear that the United States is very concerned about that situation. The gist of his remarks in Britain, though, were to reaffirm the U.S. support for enhanced security cooperation with Britain, probably its closest ally in the world. A very receptive ear in Britain, because since the country is now in the midst of an all-out Brexit process that's formally underway, there is a growing discussion on the need, as Britain disengages from Europe, to strengthen its security relationship with others, especially the United States.
Looking ahead to President Trump's visit to Europe in May, what kind of steps are European leaders making in regard to the visit of this new president, who has been very controversial?
Well, President Trump has already had meetings with some European leaders like Theresa May of Britain and Angela Merkel of Germany. And so they've already, if you would, have broken the ice. Now, we are talking about a continent, a region where the political landscape is due to change possibly dramatically in the coming months. Elections coming up in France in April and then in the autumn in Germany. So the stage has already been set, in essence. statements by both Merkel and May. At this point, there have been several months that have gone by, and there will have been several months that have gone by, and people have had a chance to start to digest the new U.S. policy.
That's VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Oh, Michael Flynn is back in the headlines. The short-lived Trump administration national security advisor reportedly requesting immunity from the Senate Intelligence Committee to discuss the contact with Russia that the campaign had, a request that's been rejected by the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's making a lot of headlines, a lot of people questioning why he wants immunity, what specifically he might know. But one piece of video in particular has gone viral, and that's a clip of Flynn appearing on Meet the Press back in September of last year. And talking about the Clinton campaign, he said, if you're seeking immunity, it probably means you committed a crime.
Oh.
Well, those words now are coming back to bite him as he himself is seeking immunity. So a lot of people bringing that clip up and questioning what exactly he knows and what he did. Then, of course, tomorrow here in the U.S. is April 1st. It's already April 1st in many parts of the world where our listeners are, and that means April Fool's Day. So lots of pranks going on already. Beware, everyone, for sure. It's taken on a whole new life in the internet age. There are pranks you can pull on your friends now using apps. There's one app in particular that you can prank call your friends. It's based on a popular cartoon series on YouTube. But there are some serious messages. Beware of online scams. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And encouragement from a lot of people not to engage in unfunny pranks, anything like fake deaths, asking someone out or breaking up with them, anything where feelings can get hurt. And then there are the real events. Even though it's April Fool's Day, the world still does turn and things still do happen. So case in point, Comet 41P is set to pass by Earth, making its closest run at Earth in over 150 years. Still 13.2 million miles away, so we don't have to worry about that. But it's being called the April Fool's Comet. And then in parts of the northeast U.S., they're set to get up to 30 centimeters of snow in the April Fool's Day snowstorm. So people might be caught off guard thinking it's a joke, but it's for real.
Well, it is the northeast.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The White House will welcome the leaders of Egypt and Jordan in a bid to improve relations. A review by a special inspector for Afghanistan reconstruction focuses on billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars. Washington will take the focus off the Syrian regime change. And the embattled South African president fires ministers who challenged him. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution Mission spacecraft, or MAVEN, was sent to the Red Planet with a goal of finding out what happened to the Martian atmosphere. Several studies suggest that a little over 4 billion years ago, Mars had a thick, rich atmosphere and oceans of flowing water on its surface, both of which could have possibly supported life. Today, however, the Red Planet is pretty much cold and desert-like and surrounded by a very thin atmosphere. New results of studies made from data gathered by MAVEN points the finger of blame on solar wind and radiation as the culprits behind stripping the atmosphere from Mars. MAVEN principal investigator Bruce Jakowski from the University of Colorado Boulder says their new research has found that most of the gas ever present in the Mars atmosphere has been lost to space. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, President Trump works to reverse his negative polls. Israel's planned new major settlement is stirring emotions both among Israelis and Palestinians. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Palestinians are furious after Israel announced that it will build the first new Jewish settlement in the West Bank in 20 years. Palestinian officials say the settlements are illegal under international law, and such construction is another nail in the coffin of the peace process. Ayman Abu Ahmad, a Palestinian from East Jerusalem, says it is clear that Israel does not want peace.
The peace they want is to take everything, to take the land, to take control of the borders, and the situation is very bad.
The announcement of the new settlement came 2 months after the Israeli army dismantled another Jewish community in the West Bank under orders from Israel's Supreme Court. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he is fulfilling a promise to the more than 300 evacuated settlers that he would build them a new community. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration had appealed to Israel to curb settlement activity, saying it harms efforts to revive peace talks with the Palestinians that collapsed 3 years ago. Nevertheless, the plans for a new settlement brought muted reaction from the White House. That is in sharp contrast to the previous administration of Barack Obama, who bitterly opposed settlement expansion. Former Israeli diplomat Zalman Shoal Oval believes there is a quiet understanding between Israel and the Trump administration for limited construction in the settlements.
From the reactions in Washington, you can see not that they are enthusiastic about it necessarily, but that they take this in their stride, understanding that Netanyahu had a political commitment which he had to honor.
As a result, Jewish settlers and their supporters in the right-wing Israeli government are declaring victory, saying it is a historic day for Zionism and the State of Israel. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
President Donald Trump's public approval rating hit a new low this week, just 10 weeks into his young presidency. The Gallup poll pegged Trump's approval rating at only 35%, a low point for a president this early in his term. Trump is trying to bounce back after the failed effort to repeal and replace President Barack Obama's signature health care law, and some experts are suggesting the president might want to hit the political reset button. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
When in need of a boost, Donald Trump likes to return to his campaign roots, like this recent rally in Louisville, Kentucky.
These entrenched interests will do anything they can to keep the broken system in place, but they will fail, and we will win, because we are fighting on this side of our great American heritage.
Trump is looking to rebound after his failed effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, which fell apart because of Republican divisions. Though still early in his term, it might be time for a policy and strategy reset, says analyst Bill Galston.
He has suffered a significant setback. This ought to be an opportunity for reflection and perhaps reorientation of his presidency. Certainly a change of strategy and tactics, if not of basic direction.
Critics also want Trump to be more presidential and to back off his Twitter habit, including former rival Jeb Bush.
He hasn't shifted to being president in the way that people are used to, and I think that's the problem.
Opposition Democrats have been emboldened by Trump's health care setback, including his election opponent, Hillary Clinton.
And when this disastrous bill failed, it was a victory for all Americans.
The health care debacle demonstrated the limits of Trump's ability to win over conservative members of his own party, says Republican strategist John Feary.
I think he has to understand the power that he has, but also the power that he doesn't have. I mean, he's not dictator, he's not king. When he says jump, congressional leaders are not going to say how high, they're going to say why.
Presidents who eventually had legislative success often had to battle through a rocky start to their presidency, including Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and Barack Obama. Now the spotlight is on Donald Trump and whether he can learn from his mistakes, says Bill Galston.
The question is not whether newly inaugurated presidents are fully equipped for the job, because most of them aren't. The question is whether they can learn from their early mistakes and change course.
Analysts say that, like many of his predecessors, President Trump is still making the transition from presidential candidate to commander-in-chief. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition.
This weekend, one of the biggest parties in country music is happening in Las Vegas, the Academy of Country Music Awards. Nikki Strong of VOA One's Country Hits is here to tell us what to expect. So Nashville is moving to Las Vegas this weekend, huh, Nikki?
I know. Should be a lot of fun. Nashville is taking over. There'll be a lot of singing to go along with the slots. The Academy of Country Music Awards is happening this weekend. The ceremony itself happens on Sunday, April 2nd. It will air in the U.S. on CBS. 8 p.m. Eastern. It's hosted by Luke Bryan and Dierks Bentley, and so many in the country music industry, execs, artists, and fans will be in town to enjoy all the festivities.
Yes, well, the activities are not just the ceremony.
No. The ACM Party for a Cause events happen from March 30th to April 2nd, and they include a string of concerts. There's a golf tournament. These events raise money for ACM's charitable arm, which is called ACM's Lifting Lives, whose purpose is basically to improve people's lives through music. And several of the artists who will be a part of the ACM ceremony are also involved in these charitable events as well.
Well, tell us who's actually going to be performing at the big awards ceremony.
Okay, so the majority of the performers are basically the nominees, including Jason Aldean, Little Big Town, Chris Stapleton, I'm excited about. I hope he will be performing new music so we can get an idea of what he has in store for his new album coming out. Reba will be performing her latest single, Back to God. Tim McGraw and Faith Hill will perform their new duet. The Backstreet Boys will make their ACM debut with Florida Georgia Line for their song God, Your Mama, and Me. And Keith Urban and Carrie Underwood are both up for Entertainer of the Year, and they will sing our favorite song, The Fighter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, one of my favorites.
Yes, yes, because blue ain't your color.
I really like that one.
Yes.
Well, now, Keith Urban is the most nominations.
Yes, speaking of which. Yeah, he has seven, understandably, and followed by Miranda Lambert and Maren Morris, who both have six. So next week, I will fill you in on who will actually, you know, who actually won what, and the lowdown on what actually goes down at the ceremony. And for those of you who are online, the red carpet pre-show will air live on Twitter via the handle at ACM Awards, AWARDS.
Sounds good. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA One The Hits. The Academy of Country Music Awards happens Sunday, April 2nd, and airs live in the U.S. on CBS at 8 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
I know we hurt you, but you're scared of love, too scared to love. He didn't deserve you, 'cause your precious heart is a precious heart.
All right, that is the music of Keith Urban. Sounds like it'll be a pretty good show on Sunday night. Well, in other news, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said Friday that funding cuts to foreign aid programs implemented by President Donald Trump will be disastrous for women around the world.
Trump has revived, by presidential memorandum, the so-called Mexico City policy, which bans U.S. foreign aid from being granted to organizations that provide abortions or information about terminating a pregnancy. Clinton, who since her stunning and unexpected loss to Trump last November has been largely silent, described the president's move as a blow to women and children and a grave mistake for our country. We have to ask, she said during remarks at the Georgetown University Institute for Women, Peace and Security, as the host of this year's Hillary Rodham Clinton Awards, will we be left behind or will we lead the way? The awards honor women who are working to bring peace around the globe. White House spokesman Sean Spicer defended Trump's decision, one that illustrates his stance as a pro-life president. Well, that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Have a great weekend, and thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When it comes to human rights, Burma has made historic progress since 2011, but significant challenges remain. In April of last year, following a peaceful and competitive election, the National League for Democracy, the then opposition party chaired by former political prisoner Aung San Suu Kyi, began its five-year term in government. The new government promptly released hundreds of political prisoners and relaxed a number of the laws restricting civil society. However, the Constitution continues to guarantee the military 25% of parliamentary seats and requires the military to appoint the leaders of the Ministries of Defense, Border Affairs, and Home Affairs, the latter of which controls the police, prisons, and subnational governance. Furthermore, some provisions of Burmese laws, such as provisions of the Telecommunications Act restricting freedom of speech, do not comport with international standards of democracy and human rights. According to the human rights reports for 2016, recently issued by the State Department, the three leading human rights problems in Burma were human rights violations in ethnic minority areas affected by conflict, restrictions on freedom of speech, and abuses and restrictions against the Rohingya population. Laws that have historically been used to criminalize free speech, especially against the military and peaceful assembly, remain in force and have been applied in some cases. In 2016, security forces were reported to have committed serious abuses, including extrajudicial killings, torture, sexual violence, forced recruitment, and destruction of property. In addition to these abuses, the government continued to deny citizenship to the Rohingya ethnic minority. This resulted in additional human rights violations, including restrictions on movement, limitations on access to health care, livelihood, shelter, and education, arbitrary arrests and detention, and forced labor. In October and November 2016, security forces responded to violent attacks against border guard police posts with clearance operations that are alleged to have included killings, enforced disappearances, torture, sexual violence, and other abuses, resulting in the displacement of at least 100,000 Rohingya. While the government took limited action to punish some police officers responsible for abuses, many government and security officials continued to act with impunity. Promoting human rights and democratic governance is a core element of U.S. foreign policy, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The human rights reports demonstrate the United States' unwavering commitment to advancing liberty, human dignity, and global prosperity around the world, including in Burma.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.